You've heard me talk about my dog Tucker a lot on this podcast, and it's hard to imagine our family now without the joy that this little field spaniel has brought to our daily lives. That's when we were approached about advertising Superfood Complete on the show, and I said, well, yes, of course. Actress Katherine Heigl has helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, and she is seeing more and more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Dogs across America, just like my dog Tucker, are trying Superfood Complete and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe and order right now to get up to 50% off your regularly priced order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience these incredible things, go to BadlandsRanch.com. That's BadlandsRanch.com/Zabe today. Summer concert season is almost upon us, and if you're heading out to a country show, it'll be all about the boots. With seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more, Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and a friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there is no in-store experience quite like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit Tecovas.com. That's Tecovas.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and they ship right to your door. Go to Tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today. Today on the Zabecast, so let me get this straight. LeBron James has to win over Laker fans, not just make the team a finals contender? A curious question from Laker Media Day. Move over Gritty and meet Dandy, who was once the Yankees mascot. And I've got Drew Olsen from the Big 920 Milwaukee. We'll talk Packers, roughing the passer, cleaning up your own mess, and a whole lot more. If you've got 45 minutes to kill, then buckle up and let's go!
Here we go!
Wednesday, September 26, 2018. Thank you for the download. Just a quick heads up, tomorrow, a very special edition of the Zabecast. It is a four-way Ryder Cup preview between me, Ron Thomas, John Ronis, and one account, Rhodesy, as a fourth guy in. Sort of the remnants of the Capital Golf Gang from the summer, but talking exclusively Ryder Cup tomorrow.
Damn you people, this is golf!
So if you hate golf and you hate the Ryder Cup, congratulations, you have been given tomorrow off. You have a day off from me. If you love the Ryder Cup and love golf, well, then I think you're going to like the show. That's tomorrow. Today, though, we got a lot to talk about, including some pretty interesting and some pretty funny sound bites from the NBA's round of media days from the start of the upcoming season, which I'm not going to get too much into the NBA now. Lord knows the NBA season goes on way too long. It is the most predictable league. The teams that you expect to be good are always good in the end. And the teams, there's very few surprises. Let's just put it that way. And we aren't going to, a lot of casual fans are not going to get really locked in until the playoffs at the earliest. You might have a spurt there. You know, Christmas Day, you're like, yay, NBA, okay, I'll watch it. And it's something that's on. But I'm not going to get too deep into it. But I got some interesting sound bites. And I'll start with this one. LeBron James, I'm not a huge LeBron James fan, but I respect him. I respect him a lot. Sometimes I do feel a bit sorry for him, and sometimes I do shake my head thinking, what is wrong with people? So here is a question he was hit with at Laker Media Day about the fans in LA and whether or not he's got to, quote, earn their trust.
LeBron, the LA fan base, how do you expect to earn their respect and earn their loyalty?
Who, me?
The fan base, yes.
Me?
Yes, you.
Me? Me?
Huh?
Just what do you say to the fans that say they want to see you and earn their respect?
I signed a 4-year deal. How much more? I mean, what do you want me to do?
That's fine. I mean, we talked to them outside of here yesterday. And
listen, I signed a 4-year deal. I'm here, so. I mean, I know what I bring to the table on the floor.
Now, credit LeBron. He is smiling and relaxed and a bit bemused at this question from this particular reporter. I thought he handled it very well. And yeah, that should be enough. I signed a 4-year deal. What? Earn their respect and their trust. What? Who the fuck are you, Laker fans? You're sitting here on a collapsed franchise that has been wandering in the woods for quite a while now. Ever since Kobe hung him up, and really even the last couple years that Kobe was there. Now, I know about the legendary Kobe stans, the absolute hardcore to the end. I'm a Kobe fan. I'm a Mamba fan to death. And LeBron, he's okay, but whatever. Only in L.A. and only with Laker fans could you have a fan base actually have the feeling of, well, yeah, let's just see about this. Let's see if he earns our respect. He's LeBron James. That's not enough. He is going to add instant credibility to your team. He is going to make going to Staples Center for Laker games instantly another spectacle once again to enjoy, beloved, and behold. And he did sign a 4-year deal. What are you missing? Any other franchise would be like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, we got LeBron James. Instead, it's like, yeah, what are you going to do to earn their trust? And I don't blame the reporter for asking this question. I think it is a question that comes from a genuine place. Next time I talk to our friend Travis Rogers out there, I'll ask him about this and say, so, with the calls you get on your show out there, how many fans are like, yeah, man, I don't trust this guy just yet? Unbelievable. LeBron, if you're LeBron, this has got to be incredibly disheartening, incredibly flummoxing to think, really? Really? I came here for this. Maybe I should have stayed in Cleveland.
On the L.A. fan base, how do you expect to earn their respect and earn their loyalty?
Who, loyalty, not base, trust.
Yes.
Respect and loyalty.
Huh?
Just what do you say to the fans that say they want to see you and earn their respect?
I signed a 4-year deal. How much more? I mean, what do you want me to do?
What do you want me to do? Great point. All right, another bit of audio from the media rounds. This one from Nor Odeborder. Kawhi Leonard, who clearly did not want to go to Toronto but got dealt there anyway, can walk out the door this coming summer as a true free agent, which he will. Put on the red Raptor jersey, met the media, tried to pretend like he was happy to be there, even though we know he wasn't, and really showed that dynamic side to him that we've all wondered about. Like, what is Kawhi Leonard really all about?
Yourself, and what would you like people to know about you?
I'm a fun guy. Obviously, I love the game of basketball. I mean, it's just more question you have to ask me in order for me to tell you about myself. I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at.
How about that for a laugh? Wow, that is the laugh that is making the rounds. And I'm not trying to laugh at Kawhi Leonard, although I am laughing at his laugh. It's a unique laugh. He's got a very, very rich voice. I mean, a very rich, resonant voice. And that laugh,
whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at.
He's right there.
Yeah, the glasses, there you go.
And he wonders why he does not have his own shoe deal. He wonders why he is not a highly marketed star. Kawhi Leonard is basically basketball dunking Brooks Koepka. Absolute phenom talent and dull as the day is long. Imagine Kawhi Leonard in speed dating. Assuming people didn't know he, you know, obviously has several hundred million dollars in the bank. Tell me a little bit about yourself, Kawhi.
And what would you like people to know about you?
I'm a fun guy.
I love how he had to pause for a couple seconds before he got to "I'm a fun guy." He's like, he was like, "Wait a minute, is this a trick question? What do you mean? What do you want us to know about you?"
Obviously, I love the game of basketball.
Okay, I got it. You like basketball. You're tall. You know, since we're doing this speed dating, what else about you, Kawhi?
I mean, it's just more questions you have to ask me in order for me to tell you about myself. I just can't give you a whole spiel. I don't even know where you're sitting at.
Oh, Lord. God bless you, Kawhi. Just do that basketball thing. As they say in basketball, let's do that basketball. You play your ass off for Toronto, see how far you get this year, and then you can go wherever you want, do whatever you want this coming summer. But still, great smile, too. I sure is a nice kid. Bit of an enigma, though. Did not talk at all. And obviously did not want to play with whatever injury he had last year. And that caused the Raptors to lose their mind and then want to trade his ass because they had frankly grown tired of him. So we talked yesterday, at least Andy and I talked about mascots. I think we talked yesterday. Did we talk yesterday on the podcast about that? Maybe not, actually. I did talk on Bob and Brian about this new Flyers mascot. Gritty is his name. And it is a giant Muppet, a 7-foot Muppet along the lines of the Philly Fanatic. And it's got sort of like the drummer from the Muppets. His hair, it's orange, it got the googly eyes, no nose. And his name is Gritty because, you know, Philadelphia, Gritty, Gritty and Gutty. I think people were saying, well, you know, what mascot should they have? It is a hockey team and the name is Flyers, so there's not... It's not a lion or a tiger or something. The Capitals, you know, what are you going to have for a mascot for the Capitals? We have a hawk named Screech. And so he is a, you know, part of the fan experience. These teams need to have a mascot. They don't need to, but they want to have a mascot that can give the team a presence at events. Events where they don't want to try to spend $1,000 to send a player or a coach for an appearance fee. Send the mascot. Birthday parties, ribbon cuttings, park openings, mall openings, corporate events. You're like, hey, there's that sports team's mascot guy. So now the Flyers have Gritty. I said in passing, I think to Bob O'Brien, I was like, well, the Yankees never had a mascot. Well, color me wrong on that one. Thank you to whoever emailed me this link. I've lost whoever sent it to me. But this is from the website FanSided. Mike Calandrillo, he writes, that time the Yankees had a mascot and some replacement ideas. We take you to 1979, and the Yanks debuted a giant pinstripe-wearing Muppet. His name was Dandy, as in Yankee Doodle Dandy, get it? Bonnie Erickson and Wade Harrison of Acme Mascots. I kid you not on that. Acme Mascots. What is this, a Roadrunner cartoon? Had previously created Miss Piggy, Rolf, Statler and Waldorf, and others. It turns out Dandy was also a distant relative of the Philly Fanatic, as well as the Montreal Expos mascot called Yuppie. They, too, were all made by Erickson and Harrison, Acme mascots. Though members of the Yankees had approached Acme about the character's inception, everyone involved in the creative process knew that getting Big George Steinbrenner on board would be easier said than done. But they massaged it, and somehow Big Stein managed to sign off on it. They probably slipped it in there with a bunch of other papers. Yep, okay, all right, sure, mascot, got it, okay, all right. The name Dandy, of course, chosen by fans as part of an American Express campaign. It was said to be the play on the American folk song Yankee Doodle Dandy. Who knows if fans were really involved? I've heard of other fan initiatives to name the team, and these are often quite rigged, which it was in the case of the Washington Wizards when they changed their name from the Washington Bullets. Supposedly there was a fan vote. I don't believe it. Nobody else in this town believes it. So Dandy was introduced to add a certain level of enjoyment to children and families during games, even though his jovial spirit was confined to the upper decks of old Yankee Stadium. He never touched the actual playing field. Following Thurman Munson's untimely death, however, in August of 79, Dandy was shelved for the rest of the season because, you know, when your star catcher kills himself in a plane crash or gets killed in a plane crash, big stupid mascot. Everybody give it up for Dandy. No, I'm kind of pissed. Thurman Munson died. After two more years of less than a cordial relationship, the mascot's creators, Erickson and Harrison, refused to lease the Yankees the rights to Dandy because the pair felt that their creation was never really appreciated nor accepted. So, yeah, once upon a time, there was a Yankee mascot in which he was roaming the upper deck. Dandy was his name. Big mustache, big 7-foot deal. So, yeah. And Thurman Munson died at the 10. He was hitting 292, 32 years old. He was practicing landing his Cessna Citation at the Akron Canton Airport. Suffered a broken neck result of the crash. Cause of death was asphyxiation. Hell of a player, hell of a catcher. Hit 292, big old handlebar mustache, which was the style at the time. 7-time All-Star, 2-time World Series champion. And just one of many Yankees to have more, like 2 or 3 different Yankees, I believe, that had run-ins with airplanes. Corey Lytle is another one, former Yankee, died in a plane crash. So, yeah, there you go. All right, I think it's Drew Olsen time, kids. What do you think? Let's go to the Great White North and talk to our buddy, Drew.
This is where the DJ talks. Don't say anything.
Okay.
All right, so I think we should begin with the fact that you owe me $1,000 since my Redskins beat the Packers, so why don't you pay up? Knock, knock, Drew. Where's my money?
Where's my money?
You know, we had no bet. We had no bet on this game, which I'm disappointed
about. Yeah, because you didn't have the stones. You didn't think your team had a chance in hell, and nobody else did either.
Wait a minute. Right. I don't recall
Packers,
it that way.
It was Packers -3, but man, I don't recall it
that way. I don't recall us ever talking about any wager at all. Even a fun wager, like dress up like something stupid. Get a hot dog suit and go stand on the corner for an hour and let people honk at you kind of bet. Yeah, and it's too bad because we won't play each other, barring the playoffs, for another 4 years.
This
unless we get matched up in terms of the so-called weighted conference opponents.
That could happen, but that was not the Packers' best day by any stretch. But it wasn't as big a debacle as Minnesota losing to Buffalo, which... The existential question in the NFL, Zabe, is not what's a quarterback hit, what's legal. It's not any of that. It's, does everybody suck?
Well, that's the thing. Why is there such variability in performance from 1 week to the next in the NFL? Why is it the most indecipherable league on the planet?
That's what I'm trying to get at. I think it's that the gap is closed and coaches are better/the same all over.
But you would think that Minnesota might lose to Buffalo. You don't think that they would get their asses handed to them in a Chinese takeout box.
Yeah, Everson Griffin wasn't there. He's a pretty good player.
By the way, what's going on with that? I read stories that he is apparently being treated for a mental health issue.
Yeah, not sure exactly what, but that's pretty
concerning,
to say
the least.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
Obviously, everybody wishes him well, and they try to want to respect his privacy. Mental health is a big thing. We're much more sensitive to it in sports than we once used to be. But I remember the days in which, I mean, there's been plenty of NFL players who have gone off the reservation mentally and just lost it.
Oh, for sure.
Remember Alonzo Spellman for the Bears?
Yes.
Who ended up wandering in a hospital gown down the highway in Detroit 1 year?
Yeah, the Packers and their Super Bowl team with Favre and those guys, you ask guys, who is the craziest guy? Wayne Simmons. They say crazy, and they meant, like, you know, not just...
Barrett Robbins is another one from, you know, the Super Bowl when he went missing and, you know, bipolar disorder. I mean, you're talking about, first of all, the NFL population is not any different than the general population at large. I mean,
Thank
it might
you.
Be different in some ways, but you're going to have, you know, M&Ms of all flavors that mirror society in a subset, which is the NFL, which is how many players in the NFL? 50 per team, 32, 1,800 players?
1,800, like roughly, yeah.
Yeah. So that's a pretty enough, large enough sample size. You're going to get guys in there that have some issues. And then you work in fame, money, pressure, possibly steroids, painkillers, everything else. It's easy for a guy to possibly get upside down mentally.
No question. No question. So, well, and that's the thing is, I guess everybody's so equal that, and it's been this way for a long time, that 3 to 4 playmakers on a team make the difference between, as we saw with the Packers last year, between, you know, 13-3 and 6-10.
Right.
So, you know, if you, the Packers had some injuries on the offensive line on Sunday, and that made it very hard for them to do anything and come back. But it, I think everything else, the coaching is, the gap has just closed, and film and analytics and just everything, everybody's doing kind of the same stuff. It's the homogenization. So the talent is, I think, closer. And then it's all through football, though. How does Old Dominion beat Virginia Tech? On what planet is that possible? On what planet does Army take Oklahoma to overtime at Oklahoma?
Right.
I mean, come on.
And by the way, how great was it the way Army left the locker room on their way out of town? Did you see the Twitter photos
no
of this?
Tape on the floor or anything like that?
Nothing. Absolutely immaculate. And their Army's, I guess, equipment staff, which has a Twitter account, said, thanks for the hospitality, Oklahoma, just as we found it.
Yeah, I'm wondering how many other programs do that, though, because managers in D1 sports are overlooked, and they work their asses off, and there's probably a lot of teams that do that.
That is a good question, and maybe other programs are like, hey, way to go,
we
Army.
We have to do that.
We've been doing that now for years.
Yeah.
Of course, some programs, I'm sure, leave it a god-awful mess.
I'm
towels,
sure.
Tape. Blood transfusion bags, dead hookers,
money, pizza boxes,
condoms, pizza boxes,
condoms,
cigars,
money,
spliffs,
yeah,
all
no
kinds
doubt.
Of shit lying around. Like, yeah, you clean it up.
5-hour energy bottles. Looks sort of like the bottom of your car.
kind of. I hate to say that, but kind of. Are you a tidy up guy?
Kind of.
Whether if you're at a restaurant, at a fast food restaurant, and there's a table that's messy, not even just yours, will you tidy up someone else's area?
If it's intruding on my enjoyment and impinging on my space, like if it's a 4-seat, those swivel seats, and I'm at a 4-top and there's junk, I'll move it. I'll take care of it. I will police my own area as well. But if it's across the room, I ain't stopping to pick it up. They pay people to do that.
Do you ever feel like you should just sit at a restaurant, sit at a fast food place, lurk, and wait for people to leave their shit behind and then gently intercept them and say, the fuck is wrong with you? And then point at their table like, your mother does not work here. Like, why couldn't you go throw that away?
I wouldn't do that because I don't like it when my wife yells at me for not putting something in the dishwasher.
and what something don't you
well,
put in the dishwasher?
At my house, a dish in the sink makes me think, well, the dishwasher needs unloading. I'm not doing it. So I'll put another dish in the sink. And then that's then we have the eruption.
Yeah. Personally, if it was up to me, I'd have a house without a dishwasher.
You know, there's something to be said for that. I know
without
a house without a garbage
dishwasher.
Disposal is a happy place. You don't need those because I talked to plumbers, and when the guys came and installed my dishwasher, they're like, don't even use your garbage disposal. People use it for everything, and it's not a good.
But how do you then get food out of your sink with a strainer, and then you got to go dump it out of the trash?
Napkins, wipe the stuff off before you put it in the, you know.
See, there's two things with me. One, I'm not necessarily obsessed with germs like some people are. So to me, if I get a plate and I scrub it good enough and wipe it down and put it on the counter to dry, to me, that's good enough. Some people are like, oh my God, there's all kinds of germs on there. And you know what? They're probably right scientifically.
Yeah,
that
germs are good.
A piping hot dishwasher with industrial detergent does a better job of killing germs. I'll grant you that.
True. But I'm with you. If you're eating a sandwich and it's crumbs, come on.
Yeah, but doing the dishes is two things. It's you got to pre-wash them.
Yeah.
And then you got to put them in the dishwasher. Then you got to run it, make sure the soap is in the right place and the blah, blah, blah. And then you got to take it out.
Yep.
And what I hate most about the taking it out, I don't know where the things in our house go.
Oh,
where does the pizza
cosine.
where does the pizza cutter go?
Pampered chef shit that I don't even know what it is. I don't even know what this appliance does. I don't know what it is. Where the fuck does it go? I have no idea.
Right. You're next on Dishwasher Talk.
Yeah, and then, God forbid, put something in the wrong place. And then, so then your default is, well, then fuck it. I'm going to get yelled at either way. I might as well get yelled at with the least inconvenience to me.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is leaving it on the counter or just like, I don't know where this goes and I don't want to put it away in the wrong spot.
Yeah.
Path of least resistance is that's a natural human tendency.
All right. So how do we get onto this? Let's get back on the road here.
Yeah.
The sports road.
This.
Not a sports fan, huh?
Oh, no, we're sports fans. We're going to talk some sports here.
Sports. Well, it was all about your Redskins and the Pack and football and the is it mediocrity? Is it parody? Is it
oh,
good?
Right. That, we were talking about cleaning up in the Army.
Yeah.
That's what it was. Okay. Yep. I wonder how many programs do that. I liked how at the World Cup this past year, the Japanese fans cleaned up their section before leaving the stadium. And
see,
people film that.
Japanese are onto something with minimalism and clean and, you know, just...
I love the Japanese.
I love
them as a people. I love them as a country. Ever since that unfortunate incident back in the 40s,
yep.
where we had to punch them in the face really hard, they've been really good peeps.
And, yeah, the minimalism thing, there's so much to be said for that. Because just thinking about all the crap that you have at your house that you don't need.
Oh, my God.
I want to divest myself of my bobblehead collection soon. Like, why do I have these freaking things?
Okay.
Like, I don't display them. I don't. They're in boxes, and I want to get rid of them.
Do you want to give them away right here on the Zabecast?
Giveaway? Giveaway?
You said divest.
Divest. I would like to sell my bobblehead. I'd like to get a little something for the effort of curating the collection over the years, which is bringing them home from stadiums and putting them on a shelf.
This is now where Confucius say, you are not achieving the highest of oneness by wanting money in exchange for them.
Yes.
A divestment is just, here, take this. I don't want it. Get it out of my house. You're like, I need some money for this.
It may come to that, but if I can make a little scratch, you know, a little something for the effort.
If you would like to, could you, how many pieces is your bobblehead?
I have to go look at it. I have so much crap.
100,000?
100 bobbleheads, probably.
Mostly Milwaukee area?
Mostly, yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
A
couple of Pittsburghs, and I got some, you know, I covered the Brewers when they were bad, and everywhere we went, they had to give stuff away to get people to the stadium.
Right.
So every road game I went, I got a checkbook cover and a beach towel and a bobblehead and a t-shirt, and I kept all that crap. I brought it home and just threw it, and I have all this crap from years and years ago.
All right, so on the Packer front, what was the fallout after the game?
Well,
there in your neck,
everybody's so obsessed with the Clay Matthews hit, and that camouflages, like, why the hell were they so bad early? The Mike Patton's defense, you know, the Vikings did it to them too. Like, they're a second half team, I guess. What the hell is wrong with the game plan in the first half? Like, why do you let teams just march down the field against you early? And
The secondary is young, but man, do they not seem to be able to spot the football.
No, yeah, Kentrell Bryce has issues with that. Now, that's something, again, coaching and stuff. Is he ever going to get better in that? Is that an innate skill? I was asking Antonio Freeman about this show I do with him, The End Zone with Antonio Freeman. And can guys learn that skill? Because to me, it seems like you talk about this kid that they drafted from Louisville, Jair Alexander. They said, oh, he's got a nose for the ball. Some guys have a nose for the ball. Some guys can't find it with freaking MapQuest.
Right. Some guys can't find the ball if they were Lassie and it was coated in bacon.
Exactly.
Where's the ball?
And that was bad. Devon House got beat on some plays. He probably
why
is it Patton's fault and the coach's fault that he's in the league? Like, he probably shouldn't be in the league, but
that's
you have to play the roster that you have.
Why do your DBs commit such obvious holding penalties?
Oh man, three on a series. Well, and that speaks to another problem.
On the fade pattern to Doxson, why does your DB decide, I'm just gonna jump on his back like a coat?
Yeah, that was...
Doxson sucks. He might have dropped that pass anyway.
Yeah.
It might have been out of bounds anyway. He might have not gotten his feet in anyway. Why don't DBs know, if I commit PI here, that it's an almost automatic touchdown because it's first and goal
exactly.
at the one?
That's the defensive equivalent of calling a timeout in the second half to avoid a delay for 5 yards.
Which
Take
your
the
team
fucking
did,
five
by
yards.
The way.
Exactly, which they've done routinely in the first couple weeks of the season. Take the 5 yards, you got Aaron Rodgers.
How about this for stupid coaching? In the first half last night in the Buccaneers-Steeler game, Buccaneers in the end of the first half are snapping the ball with less than 2 minutes to go with 15 seconds left on the play clock. Guess who got the ball back and scored with just 6 seconds left, the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
So if they had just taken one play down further than 15 seconds, they would have not had those points add up. It's little things that coaches routinely do in this league that infuriate the shit out of us at home.
Mike McCarthy's clock management at the end of the first half Sunday.
That's another one. But,
in the rain, let's try a 61-yard field goal when we've got a guy who averages two Hail Marys a year. What the fuck?
Yeah, right, exactly. That would have been a better play.
Yes, a 61-yard field goal in the rain, and then the snap gets botched, and they don't get to try it. But they also sat on their timeouts before that. When I have Aaron Rodgers, and it's inconsistent because in the past he's taken timeouts and been burned by it.
All right, couple things that drive me crazy. Situational unawareness. So your DB that, tackled Doxson in the end zone was situationally unaware because PIs – on relatively short throws, I think you guys were inside the 20 when you started that play.
That was the third PI of the drive.
PIs inside the end zone are a terrible percentage play because it's first and goal at the 1.
Yeah, that's a touchdown.
PIs in the middle of the field at like the 50 when you are clearly beat is a high percentage play because you're saying, okay, they'll get the ball here at the 50 because I got beat on a deep ball, but they're not going to get a touchdown.
Yeah.
Situational awareness.
Well, the one thing about that to me...
One PI is very smart. The other PI is very dumb.
The one thing about that to me is that every play, and that's one of the things that's amazing about the athletes in the league that you just forget to marvel about, but every reception basically is inches from the outstretched fingers of the defender.
Oh, yeah.
And they're so good that way that they're trying to make the play without the PI, and they're so, an eyelash away, and... I don't know. If it's premeditated, I'd agree with you, but I don't know if that's as simple as it sounds.
Well, I think it is. Don't commit PI.
I'm talking about making the PI at the midfield on the reception when you're close to pass. Yeah, when you're going to get it. Yeah.
Well, you got to be clearly beat.
Yeah.
Like two steps behind, and the receiver is looking back with his arms out like a basket. Okay, so there was that frustrated me. Then, your guy not calling timeouts as the Redskins had the ball was infuriating, and the announcers even mentioned it. But even worse was, you try that field goal from 61 on a wet field. What are all the things that can go wrong? Block field goal,
everything.
Return for a touchdown.
Just a short field goal return for a touchdown. Right?
And when the snap is botched, why does your holder not have the situational awareness to just curl up and down it? Why did he get up and decide, I might throw this ball? Nothing good happens
on that
play.
You're right. You're not going to throw a touchdown pass.
It's a Garoya premium fumble.
Yep.
It's an interception. All bad things.
He's a rookie. God. You would think that a punter would especially know that because they watch the game as closely as anybody.
And you got to go through these things. You got to say, 61-yard field goal. Here's the deal. If the snap's bad, if I bobble the hold, I'm just going to eat it. We're going to go in the locker room.
Exactly. Those things are bad. And then where's
Snap
the coach telling
Ready?
That?
I know.
Where's the coach telling that before he goes out there?
So you guys don't have a bye week. We do. You're going to have to soldier on with Rodgers on that knee.
Yeah, that early bye, though.
I don't like it
guys,
either.
That's bad.
Well, we didn't pick it.
No, that's true. So they have to soldier on. And now they get Buffalo, which is, the hangover from that victory over the Vikings. And this is such a week-to-week league that Kansas City can't lose right now. But at some point, they'll lose two in a row. And people are like, they suck. Like, it's going to happen. It's this league. So you can almost set your watch by it.
All right. So overall, the bullishness on the Packers season is at what level?
Well, here's the thing. They've disappointed so far. 1-1-1, they're closer to 0-3 than they are 3-0.
Correct.
But they're also, look where the Vikings are. Look at everybody else. The Bears are fallible. They got the surge from Khalil Mack, and they look good now, and they're in first place now. But it's such a temporary week-to-week league that I don't think everything that we've known about New England and Green Bay and good teams that we just throw out because of the first 3 weeks. We forget this every year. Okay. It's week to week, and if you keep Aaron Rodgers upright, and you're going to be in most games and have and in the playoff push, and then it's just all about who's hot and healthy at the end of the season. So the rest of this is just, I don't know, it's just folly trying to predict what's going to happen.
But do you really, who knows what the state of Rodgers' knee really is? Only the team doctors, right? And Rodgers himself, right?
Yeah, Rodgers. Well, and there's no doubt they've obviously changed things up and the Redskins and everybody else in the world has film of him and what they're trying to do now. So now what do the Packers do to counterbalance that? Because they've turned him into Tom Brady or Peyton Manning, a little bit more stationary than he usually would be.
Oh, there is tons of plays where he would have escaped when healthy.
Oh, yeah.
We would have been in big fucking trouble.
No doubt. Yeah, Kerrigan had some good pressures and stuff, but like he not only would he sniff that out and see it coming, he would have dashed and twinkle-toed around it.
Yeah. On one play, Ioannidis desert carded, I believe it was Bakhtiari, right into Rodgers, and Rodgers just fell down.
Yep.
Like, that would have never happened if Rodgers was healthy.
No,
never.
And then when Bulaga went down with the back and they brought in this kid, Jason Spriggs, who's a turnstile, he got abused.
I know.
He got abused.
But you were still in that game until Cobb fumbled late.
That's true. And then what was the most damaging play to the Packers? Was it that fumble or the drop by Kendricks? Because both of those plays, I felt like they had a little mojo going, and it was like, ooh, Rodgers is going to do this to the Redskins just like he did to the Bears earlier, you know?
I've already said, both on Bob and Brian and on my show locally, and on the Zabecast yesterday, I would have cut Lance Kendricks.
Oh, I totally agree.
One reason.
Totally.
To send the message to the locker room, we are not fucking around.
Because he's been dropping passes going back to last year.
Has he
camp,
really?
He was dropping passes in camp. If he doesn't catch that ball, he has no function on the team. Because he doesn't block, he doesn't do anything else. Get him the fuck out of there.
Right.
Absolutely.
Exactly. And it has such a beneficial effect from a sobering standpoint.
Wake everybody up. It's throwing the bats in the shower. It's firing a coach. You know, it's yes, absolutely. Or we have three tight ends in here working out today and have them walk by his locker, you know, on the way to go get their equipment for the workout, because you have to, I agree, send that message. I'd cut him.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, I saw a tweet this morning about how certain moves, like, you know, the Browns win after they trade Josh Gordon. Is that coincidence, or is that?
Or is that? Yeah. Well, now here's the flip side of that. The Vikings cut their rookie kicker when he missed kicks against the Packers, right? That they drafted.
They got their asses handed to him in part because I think that was a scapeoat. Like, we would have won the game except for our kicker.
Yeah, that was.
And so they lost focus
deeper
on
issues.
Hey, we have a pro team coming in that could kick our ass.
But okay, so the flip side, and the Packers have the long view, which is why they won't cut Lance Kendricks, but. They had trouble with Mason Crosby a few years ago. He hit a slump, and when you have a long career like he's having, he hit a slump to the point where we thought he was done, and then it's like, oh, you got to start thinking about looking at other guys, bringing guys into training camp to compete with him, scare him, put the fear of God in him. They stayed with him, and he's still pretty damn good, and it turned out to be the right move for them.
Yeah.
So every situation is different, but Lance Kendricks has dropped enough balls. I've seen him drop enough balls now that, he's not getting it done.
Get out.
Yeah.
All right, real quick, what are we going to do about this rule that continues to plague the NFL? Can anything be done? Will the league back down at all?
I think they will. I honestly do. I really do. And by the way, that was the one thing that the gifs that went around was the Matthews hit was the penalty, and then Rodgers got ragdolled by your D lineman that threw him
down. Deron Payne.
Yeah, and no call. Referee said he was screened. Didn't see it right. Was in the open field. The guy got ragdolled and thrown on his head.
But how should Deron Payne tackle Rodgers in that case?
Well, isn't that... hey, we said this during the preseason, and I said, hey, let's put the quarterbacks in the red shirts so they can't be hit in the preseason and make the preseason somewhat watchable. It's coming to that, and it's coming to that in the regular season or the way they're going. So I think there will be... I saw Mark Maskey's column that they're going to have a competition committee call and that they... They don't like the way the winds are blowing on this because they're getting ripped from former player. Everybody's ripping them. It's a horrible fucking application of a rule that was designed not to make the game a mockery, but to protect these guys. And then you see Jimmy Garoppolo get hurt on a scramble and out for the season.
Right, exactly.
It's football. Guys get hurt.
I said Jimmy Garoppolo should not have been out there, and my co-host Scott Lynn said, what are you talking about? It was just a scramble. I go, it's dangerous out there. Anytime a quarterback runs out there, he's putting his life in danger. And that's why Josh Allen was so spectacular hurdling dudes, because he was out there just doing crazy shit.
I remember when Rodgers used to do that too. And then after you've taken about 4 or 5 years of hits, you stop doing that. Self-preservation kicks in.
Yeah. Well, all it takes is one knee to the helmet.
Exactly.
And then remember that time in Detroit and he was out like a week.
After. Exactly. And so the young quarterbacks have that swashbuckle. They'll hold the ball for that extra tick. And the older guys will get rid of it in terms of self-preservation.
Well, I don't know what the league's going to do. I
think
the
they have to back off. I think they will back. The pressure's been too much. I think they will back off of Like the Clay Matthews thing won't be a penalty moving forward, but they'll still try to, you know, massage everything else they can.
There's no defining it. That's the thing. So there will still be some calls that are deemed you're too rough on the quarterback. Whereas before it was a very broad so much was left to the referee to say, you know, late hit or unnecessary roughness. And it was in the judgment of the referee as to what was a quote late hit. And it varied, yeah. But it just was. Now they're trying to define it. Doesn't work. I was thinking about fan protests for this. And the only fan protest I thought of that might have, I don't think it'd have any effect, but it would look cool. What if somebody distributed to fans 20,000 yellow penalty flags and they were instructed after the first one of those calls to throw them onto the field?
Well, I think the laws of physics would hurt your plan because
you can't throw a penalty flag
that far? If I'm 60 yards deep behind an end zone, I'm not getting a penalty flag onto the field.
All right, what if you distributed it to people just in the first six rows?
Well,
because first of all, these are things that are easily smuggled into the stadium.
They become like terrible towels, and they're as long as there's no weight on the thing, like just
no, there would be a weight. There has to be.
Yeah,
a weight.
But
it would be a little packet of sand.
Then it becomes a projectile, and they're not going to let people.
No, but you could get
somebody's going to catch one in the eye. Who's going to give those out? My radio station, yours, liability. Come on.
Well, maybe. It'd be a great promotion.
Didn't we have a player almost blinded by a referee's flag?
That's
what would happen when they have helmets on?
That's because there was BBs in it.
Yeah. Well, and you want sand.
You're not going to.
Sand, BBs.
Yeah.
The corner.
I'm not going to have shards of glass in it, for God's sakes.
I understand the sentiment, but do protests really work in that form? No.
Ratings are up.
Come
I don't
on.
Know. I don't want to. I don't expect it to work, Drew. I just want to clown the league.
Well, anything you can do there is great. That's.
On the baseball front, so, you know, we talked about the Brewers being right there in the neck of it, right in the heat of it. Question. This was posed to Joe Maddon saying he was asked, do the Cubs have a celebration planned tonight if they clinch a playoff spot but not the division? Maddon said, I don't know. I'm not part of any planning committee. That's up to Angela, Phyllis, Pam, and Oscar, which is a very deft office reference. But how
very
do you feel
done.
About... How do you feel about baseball teams celebrating at every little step along the way? We clinched the division. Celebrate. We won our first playoff game.
Sources close to my situation said the Brewers were thinking about that because there was a chance. I guess I got to check to see what could happen. If they win the next two against St. Louis, there would be a...
They would be guaranteed the wild card, one of the two wild cards,
yes,
home or away?
Yes, okay. And it's trending now.
Do you celebrate
But
that?
they were planning
I would
that
not.
Because you have to travel with your own champagne and goggles, right? They're on a road trip right now.
Right.
So the thought was that they would celebrate when they get in and then not celebrate again unless they overtake the Cubs for the division. Like, you'd celebrate the fact that we're in the playoffs. And it would be subdued because you're going for that number one wild card instead of the number two. But winning the number two, when you've only been to the playoffs four times in your franchise's history, you got to celebrate it.
Damn.
And one of those was a strike-shortened half season, by the way.
Four
81, 82,
times.
08, and 11
wow.
in franchise history. So they're going to celebrate it, but then they would not celebrate again unless they were to overtake the Cubs and win the division and get the bye. That was their plan. Although now... They're close enough, and you can smell it, that they're probably going to win the number one wild card. Maybe they will not. Maybe they will hold that in abeyance and celebrate what could be at home.
Fancy word.
Yes. What could be at home, because they have two more against the Cardinals and then three at home against the Tigers to wrap up the season. Traditional interleague rival.
Why can't you just say, look, we're going to celebrate on game 162, assuming we're in the playoffs by hook or by crook.
Well, fan appreciation night is Saturday at the old ballpark, so celebrate then. But you can plan it because they might have already clinched stuff by then. Where they are.
Just say we will celebrate if we're in the playoffs on game 162.
I'm with you. It is silly
like
to have
the end of the season.
It is silly
ready
to have
it.
Two. Celebrations and like, but you know, it would
I guess
be
they
notable.
Want it right in the moment. They want to pop the champagne the very minute they can.
But like, that's the thing is we clinched a wild card, but we still want to have home field. So we're not going to go out and get all polluted and hung over because it'll be a very subdued deal.
Yeah. Hey, I got a good soundbite for you before we get to fuck that guy from NBA Media Day. This was Michael Beasley not a Rhodes Scholar. Please. He's good at putting a basketball into a ring, and that's wonderful. Everyone in society has their thing that they do. But here was Michael Beasley being asked by Dave McMenamin of ESPN. He was trying to lead him down a cliched path, and I guess Beasley just didn't get the cliche or the answer he was wanting, he wasn't getting. See if you can break down this little exchange for me.
With taking a day at a time, where should this Lakers team end up by the end of the year?
Exactly where we want to.
Which is?
Where we want to be.
Where do you want to be?
Taking it a day at a time.
Oh, the circle of existentialism.
It gets better. Here, I want to re-rack that because it's only beginning. This is 47 seconds. I played just the first 10 seconds of it.
Time, where should this Lakers team end up by the end of the year?
He wants a prediction, right? McMenamin's
yeah.
like, give me
Players
a prediction. Can you beat the Warriors is what he wants to hear, right?
Exactly where we want to.
Which is?
Where we want to be.
Where do you want to be?
Taking it a day at a time.
But if once you add up all those days, where can you end up?
The future.
That is the best answer ever. When you add them all up, where are you going to be?
Where are you going to be?
The future, obviously.
Once you add up all those days, where can you end up?
The future.
Fair. You're going to move the calendar there. But the future, let's say April through June, April through May. Where should the ceiling be for this group?
People say right there, this was the opening to say, like Jordan did at North Carolina, the ceiling is the roof.
Yes.
Which was one of the great non sequitur lines of all time.
Incredible.
Like, wait, what? The ceiling's the roof. What?
The ceiling? I don't know. I'm not sure. That's not up for me. I'm not an analysis. I'm not a, you know, stat chaser or...
Stat chaser. What?
Like I said, we're here to do one job, which is work, sacrifice, and take it a day at a time.
That's three jobs: work, sacrifice, and take it a day at a time.
Drew, you have stuck microphones in professional athletes' faces for your whole adult career. You've seen this. You know this. I maintain that this is one of the reasons why otherwise sane men and women really start to question what they've done with their lives once they have interviews like this.
Yes.
Where you say to yourself, boy, I was trying to do the best I could to get an answer that was interesting and I could maybe make a story out of, and I couldn't do it. And maybe it's my fault because I'm not asking the good enough questions. Maybe it's this basketball player's fault because he's got an IQ of 45. Or maybe it just is the way the universe is supposed to be. He has no great insights because he's there to dribble and dunk. And I have no ability to extract from him anything brilliant because it's just fucking
sports. To lead him into the narrative that I'm trying to... I have a story and I'm trying to get a quote to fit that story where everybody's
maybe,
making predictions. I'm trying to get him to say... Well, because Beasley is weird enough that he might say something really outlandish that you could lead the story with.
Maybe he should have just said, hi, Michael, I need you to say something outrageous. In fact, I've got a list of things right here. So go ahead, just start with number four there. Yes, that one says, the Warriors ain't shit. We gonna tell them bitches who's the new sheriff.
There you go.
That's it right there. Read that,
Zabe,
and we'll be
good. I got jaded at an early age in this business, and I'm trying to regain it.
Trying to get unjaded?
Yeah, I'm trying to regain my Billy Mumfrey cockeyed optimism, right? And I can't fucking... It's hard, but... I learned, like, going to especially NFL locker rooms, nothing good comes out of it. Post-game locker rooms is such a circle jerk that it's just not even worth the time. Because I live 2 hours from Lambeau Field, and it's like, it's not even worth my time to patrol there and get, you know, cliches after games. And unless you have rapport, which I don't have, and can get guys on the side and ask an incisive, you know, and guys know me well enough to trust me to give me an incisive, real quote, not just sanitized for everybody's consumption. It's just not worth it.
The only place that I think you're going to get insight is in the off season in a relaxed setting, over a round of golf, over some beers, where you're visiting an athlete in his home, and you're just sort of shooting the shit, and you're kind of like getting an insight into how he thinks.
Yeah. Other than that, it's pretty. And the only way to do that is to have ESPN on your mic flag, basically.
Doesn't hurt.
It doesn't hurt. But you see that. But that's one of the things. And I'm a baseball guy, and you have so much time. and access to guys, and the small talk builds rapport, and that you can get a little bit more, a little bit of a layer.
Okay. Before we get to fuck that guy, your thoughts on the Ryder Cup? You are famously not a golfer.
No,
not a golf fan.
I like
fan.
The Ryder Cup. I'm a Christmas and Easter golf fan. Christmas and Easter. I like
welcome into the Church of Golf.
Exactly.
For your biennial visit.
Yes.
Are you a little bit excited? Are you excited because Tiger Woods is now back, fully back, resurgent as he is, and resplendent in the game of golf?
The game is always stronger when he is good, much like when the Lakers or the Yankees are good. Yeah. The game is stronger, but his history in the Ryder Cup's not great. So even when he was playing well.
But the Ryder Cup is great because it's totally different than real golf, where real golf is four boring days, everyone on their own, and just polite, like, little claps. You know, you can take a double on the first hole, and it's like nobody even notices, no big deal, because it's just you're playing for your own money. At the Ryder Cup on the first tee shot, the pressure is there, like, holy fuck, this is match play. We can't go one down on the first hole. I need to hit the fairway. Oh, shit, I've got a lot of pressure on me. Crowds are amazing, and for some reason, the European team on paper, like this year, never measures up to the U.S., yet they win.
But they win and they play because they're gritty.
Exactly.
And so what I love most about it is watching these, and they are athletes, these golfers, but they're not, because they're not in a team sport, some things don't come naturally to them. And watching golfers who are paired.
High five. Awkward high-fiving.
And this is the most sexist thing I'll say on the podcast in the history of the Zabecast. They high-five like girls because women, and girls who don't play sports, women who don't play sports who high-five in the bar when your team scores something, they do it from the elbow. And a proper high-five is like from the shoulder and relaxed, but they kind of do a patty cake thing from the elbow. And that's what the golfers do. And it looks so freaking lame that it cracks me up.
You got to high-five like you have no regard for your palm or your other guy's palm. Just smack that mofo.
Yes.
You need to say, we're going to high five.
And it's from the shoulder, not the elbow. It's not the, not a patty cake thing.
All right. That brings us to our weekly segment, FTG.
I'm not a good guy. I'm the guy.
Fuck that guy.
Fuck that guy.
All right, here we go, Drew. Who is your FTG for the week?
This was it's a crowded field. Could be referees. It could be Dean Blandino.
Yeah, there's a lot of nominees this week.
Nominees, and I'm not even going to look up his freaking name because he's not worth it. But fuck that guy who spit on the pizza at Little Caesars inside Comerica Park.
The worst,
because there is a level of trust, and you want to put out of your mind what can happen when you don't see the food that you're going to consume prepared. And it doesn't matter if it's a five-star restaurant or a truck stop Arby's. It doesn't matter, because you don't know if that steak that looks so good presentation-wise on the plate, it was just dropped on the floor moments earlier. And you have to put that stuff out of your mind and suspend all thought of what could have happened in order to enjoy the sustenance provided by eating out. So fuck that guy for making me think of stuff that happens like this.
I said he should get a year in jail under a ordinance that basically it's called a disregard for others. Wanton disregard for innocent other people. A year? Would you like a year in jail for that guy? Too harsh.
Well, okay.
Six months.
A year in jail is too expensive, but let's make his life miserable and let's make him
How about this?
Toilets in the...
No. We spit on his food.
For a year.
Every day. Every day for a month.
Oh, man. And make him consume it? Yeah.
Well, he doesn't have to, but he'd be in jail for a month, and every meal he's served in jail has spit on it.
Yeah.
Where the guard spits on it, and so he can either starve or he can eat spit food for a month. That's justice right there.
There you go.
Someone call that cruel and unusual, which I guess our Constitution prohibits. But in my country, I'd
save
love
justice.
Exactly. All right. My FTG this week goes to one Chris Baker, former defensive tackle of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And after that, or before that, the Washington Redskins. He was cut by Cincinnati this summer. He's currently on the street looking for a job. And after the Redskins beat the Packers, he tweeted a picture of himself in burgundy and gold from 2 years ago, with the line, "I want that old thang back. I miss you, DC. Hashtag swaggy time. Hashtag HTTR. No. we let you walk because your work habits were suspect and everyone knew it. We let you walk because you were going to get overpaid by somebody else and you did. Tampa let you walk because you were a bad guy that didn't give a shit when the team was losing. Now you're trying to lobby your way back via Twitter when we've got a great defensive line with young studs like Daron Payne and John Allen. Oh, no. Swaggy. Big Swaggy. Swaggy time. Chris Baker. Fuck that guy. You're not coming back.
Thanks for the scouting tip, Zabe. The Packers, they lost Mo Wilkerson for the year to an ankle injury at FedEx Field, so they might have to call Swaggy.
I know. All right, for more at Drew Olsen, listen to him on the Big 920 and on the iHeartRadio app, and follow him on Twitter at
Drew Olsen MKE.
All right, buddy. We'll see you next week.
You bet, man.
Let's end with this today. Millennials ruin everything. Am I right? They get blamed for a lot, but in one case, millennials may be saving a pretty important institution. According to a new study, millennials are actually causing the U.S. divorce rate to plummet. New data shows that younger couples are approaching relationships very differently from baby boomers who married young, got divorced, remarried, and sometimes went through that two more times or more. Generation X and especially millennials are being pickier about whom they marry, tying the knot at older ages when education, careers, and finances are already on track. The result is the U.S. divorce rate dropped 18% from 2008 to 2016. This according to analysis by the University of Maryland's Philip Cohen in their sociology department. Demographers already knew the divorce rate was falling. The question, though, was why? And what current trends mean for the marital prospects of today's newlyweds. Young people get the credit for fewer divorces because boomers have continued to divorce at unusually high rates all the way into their 60s and 70s. From 1990 to 2015, according to Bowling Green's National Center for Family and Marriage Research, the divorce rate doubled for people 55 to 64 and even tripled for Americans 65 plus. Cohen's results suggest that this trend called gray divorce may have leveled out in the past decade, but that boomers are still divorcing at much higher rates than previous generations did at similar ages. I have two theories on this. One is that technology and the internet and matching services, Match.com and, you know, what is the, not DNA and me, Match.com, eHarmony, Tinder even, not just a hookup thing. I know a friend of a friend who met his now girlfriend on Tinder. He's a divorcee, and they are like chalk and cheese. Peas in a pod. Probably will get married themselves. So I think technology is at least helping out so that, you know, one Star Trek nerd can select from a host of other Star Trek nerds without having to go to a convention of Star Trek nerds and then wander the aisles in hope of, well, I got to find somebody today, somebody to be my soulmate. And similar interests. I think that's helped. Number one. And number two, I think there's probably more realistic expectations of marriage with the younger generation today. And maybe seeing their parents or their parents' parents go through so many divorces, they're like, hey, fuck that. I'm going to make sure if I tie the knot, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to wait. I'm going to really find somebody that I know I'm compatible with, and I'm going to go into it with my eyes wide open and my expectations down here, a lot lower. I'm going to realize that it's not going to be all fun, giggles, and joy every single day. But I may be wrong about that. Who knows? That'll do it for me today. Thank you so much for listening. Download, subscribe, comment, and like. Tell three friends. Get your podcasts wherever you get them. Premium Zabe can be had at zabe.com/premium. Monster week four of fantasy football five-way Friday coming up. It's only $4.99 a month. I know you got that in your pocket. Help support myself and this podcast. And in the meantime, get out of here. Do something productive. Log off the internet, for God's sakes. Pet a dog. Take a walk. Do some recreation. Talk to somebody you haven't talked to in a while. And basically live life. And we will see you next time.